And now we turn to Britain. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Piers Collins from the Wireless Network, who will talk to us about the British experience. That was great, thank you. Okay, all set up. Thanks, Piers, over to you.
Am I coming through on the speakers?
I'm now, great. Well, my name's Piers Collins, I'm a director at the Wireless Group, thank you. For having me here and World DAB for inviting me along. It's a great pleasure to have the opportunity of giving you a quick flavour of our experience of DAB in the UK. I'm conscious that this session is the only thing standing between us and a very tasty lunch, so I'll aim to march through the slides as quickly as possible. I wanted to give you a very brief overview of who we are, then provide you with some context in the form of a snapshot of the current UK radio market and the effect digital technologies are having on our industry. And then I'd like to highlight a few lessons we've learned over the past 20 years or so since the first DAB multiplexes were launched in the UK. And hopefully there'll be a good amount of time for any questions at the end. So I don't know how familiar you are with Wireless Group, but we're one of the largest radio broadcasting companies in the UK and Ireland. About 2 years ago now, in keeping with the seemingly relentless consolidation of the global media industry, we became part of the News Corp family. News Corp is a multinational, diversified media and information services company comprising businesses across a range of media, such as book publishing with HarperCollins, information services business such as Dow Jones and Move, cable and pay TV distribution in Australia through Foxtel, and of course, not forgetting its newspaper and print media mastheads such as the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Australian, and in the UK, the Sun and the Times. I don't know if you can see the photo in on the slide that clearly, but the office block in the foreground there is News UK's headquarters just by London Bridge. And we're currently in the process of constructing a suite of brand new radio studios on the top floor there for our new national radio stations that we'll be moving into over the course of the coming months, which is really exciting. So specifically, in terms of Wireless Group, you can think of our operations under four headings. First, our national radio brands led by TalkSport, the world's biggest sports radio station, now joined by our three not-so-new anymore national services currently in their second year of operation. Our local radio brands, stations such as FM 104 in Dublin, 96 FM in Cork, Signal Radio in Stoke, hugely successful stations which enjoy leadership positions in their respective markets. We also have an international program syndication business currently recently rebranded Wireless Studios, which has been built up around our sports programming expertise. We are the global audio partner of the English Premier League and hold the exclusive live commentary rights to all Premier League football matches in any language. And we're currently operating in nearly 70 countries around the world, creating output in 6 languages. On the back of our international division, we became a minority partner in a joint venture consortium which bid for one of the AM licenses that were advertised by ICASA a few years ago here in South Africa, in Gauteng in particular. The station is still to come to air, but when it does, it will be South Africa's first 24-hour non-stop sports radio station, which we believe will have huge appeal. The service will be embracing the multi-platform reality of audio distribution in today's world, but I'm sure the service will be certainly look at DAB carriage in the future. And then last but not least, our DAB multiplex business, organised under the Switch Digital brand, which I look after. The multiplex licences we hold broadly mirror the local radio markets in which we have major FM stations. We also own or have significant investments in 2 of the 3 London multiplexes and the 3rd national DAB multiplex, Sound Digital, which is a 3-way joint venture between us, Bauer and Arkiva, which is the UK's version of Centec. So that's a little bit about Wireless Group. And so what about the UK radio market? Well, at present, UK radio looks in pretty rude health. Commercial radio weekly reach has overtaken the BBC and is at an all-time high. Listening via digital platforms has just passed the magic 50% mark. In no small way, driven by the number of new cars now available with DAB radio sets as standard. For consumers, previously limited to a handful of BBC services and just 3 national commercial radio stations, the introduction of DAB networks has led to quite literally an explosion of choice. This is just at a national level. A more, the structural impact of DAB on the market, at least in terms of, the relative allocation of distribution resources between the BBC and the commercial sector is huge. A more level playing field in this regard has contributed to, in no small way, a solid structural shift in market share. And the picture on the revenue side is also positive. Following the dark days of the financial crisis, UK commercial radio revenues are now back at all-time highs, and income flows from nascent digital audio initiatives are starting to develop into meaningful streams. So while press reports of the death of FM may be a little premature, I think there's no doubt that UK radio is entering, if not a golden age, at least a new digital one. And the continued relevance of audio in people's lives is attracting the attention of the tech giants. Quite how all this will play out is anyone's guess. But so far, radio is bearing up. Live radio still accounts for 3/4 of audio listening in the UK. And even amongst pesky teenagers and young people, radio remains a really important part of life. So I think we can say that on balance, DAB has been a good thing, certainly for the UK radio. However, in truth, the trip here hasn't been straightforward or indeed quick. And the road has certainly been strewn with hazards, dead ends, and wrong turns. So I think, sort of thought in the last few minutes, I'd whiz through some of the key lessons we've learned along the way. I'll be developing some of these later on this afternoon in another session if anyone's interested in going into this in a bit more detail. But first up, I think we've really recognised the importance of brands and how best to go about leveraging the power of brands in this vastly more crowded and competitive digital radio environment. Second, the importance we've found as Wireless Group of owning and operating DAB multiplexes, not least because of the enhanced control this affords us over critical broadcast distribution, but also because of the ability to offset dual transmission costs via leasing capacity to third parties. Third, getting the regulatory incentives right is critical. Obviously, meeting public policy objectives is important, but there are always a number of ways to achieve these. In the UK, Ofcom deployed a carrot incentive for broadcasters, allowing those services that simulcast on DAB uncontested analogue licence renewals. Whether this is the right approach for other markets, it's not really for me to say. However, considerable time should be spent to think through the implications of whatever framework is adopted, as certainly the whole DAB ecosystem will take shape around those regulatory foundations. In respect of the detailed regulation, I would suggest that it's important to worry about what's important. Things such as ensuring open access and promoting fair competition, and leave the market to find the right balance in areas that are less important, like what bit rate certain services should use, for example. Myself and my colleagues maintain a constant and hopefully constructive dialogue with Ofcom, and we're hugely supportive of their moves to reduce the regulatory burden on UK commercial radio. Lastly, keep the engineers in check. What it says here is get your priorities right. But what this means is to remember that this is a creative and commercially led initiative, not a technical one. Therefore, as a multiplex operator, whoever that is, whether that's a broadcaster and/or transmission services provider, the focus must be on customer service and value for money. So providing highly reliable networks with usable coverage at commercially viable rates. Be aware the rapidly diminishing marginal returns from adding additional transmitters on overall network coverage. I mean, this graph, if you can read it, shows that you can you can get from 0% to 90%, low 90% coverage of UK households with around 200 transmitter sites. However, to get from there to 99%, you'll need going on 1,000 sites, the cost implications of which I'm sure won't be lost on any of you. So that's it for me. In a nutshell, broadcasters, I think, I suggest embrace the competitive challenge. Policymakers, be clear about the end game you want to get to. And remember, radio isn't TV. I think that's confused some policymakers in the UK. And engineers, MUX operators, keep it simple and don't get carried away. That's it. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Let me just quickly throw one out. Your graphic of the various brands that are available, and the way in which commercial radio has overtaken, in fact, the BBC. Is the BBC not active in this space?
In DAB?
Yes.
Oh, gotcha.
So are they not adding brands into the mix, or sub-brands?
They are, but at a national level, they have one multiplex. National multiplex, and they filled that up with new BBC, existing BBC services, so 1 to 5, but a new service, BBC 6, and, you know, BBC One Extra, and, you know, various services like that. There are two national commercial multiplexes. The latest one, Sound Digital, is also deploying DAB Plus coding, so there's more services than usual on that. And it's just simply the shift in number of services has just been huge.
Sure. Thanks. Any other questions? Andrew?
Thanks. I'm just not up to date. So the BBC, they're still on the original DAB, or are they in progress or considering migrating to DAB Plus? Or is it a matter of most of their listeners only have DAB radios? So,
yeah, well, again, you know, I think it's a classic. The UK is a classic case of no first mover advantage. You know, certainly not in the cost of the networks. And then, you know, we elected back in the late 90s, early 2000s to go with the DAB rather than DAB Plus coding algorithm. You know, we now have millions of radio sets that can't receive DAB Plus. I think the BBC is the national public service broadcaster is very cognizant of not disenfranchising any license fee payers by moving to DAB Plus. But I'm sure, you know, commercial broadcasters are using that now. And you know, certainly in London, we've got a number of DAB Plus services launching.
Thanks. Yes, at the back there.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks. That was a very good presentation, again. I'm not sure how to phrase the question, but what is your view in terms of net neutrality, zero rating, compared to DAB, DAB Plus? Because there was discussions earlier, there seems to be a concentration on like LTE and the cost of data. But there seems to be this issue on net neutrality and zero basing of services.
As I understand it, net neutrality is something that's of particular concern in the US at the moment. I believe it's not an issue yet in Europe. We're still very much in favour of net neutrality. But I think with the consolidation that's going on of big media, US media companies, and the release of you know the move away from net neutrality, it'll be very interesting to see how all that plays out. But I still think am I about to explode or something? I still think that the DAB is going to be important. The horse is bolted. You know, we've just got to accept that, you know, radio is multi-platform, and that's it. To survive, you've got to be, you know, really on your game by creating fantastic content that people, you know, want to listen to. And we still have the ability as broadcasters with, you know, fantastic brands and big, you know, amounts of listeners to kind of control that process. And if we don't, then that's our lookout, frankly.
Okay, I think there's Mike, there's Lynn here. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think we need some a little bit of some education or some assistance on this regard. How do you make sure that your REMs, your listenership figures, are accepted by the entire industry bodies? And is it possible that you could have one industry body not accepting and going its own route and have its own research? And which company are you using for your own research?
Well, in the UK, there is one research body. It's called RAJAR. It's the gold standard for radio audiences. It is the currency that anyone uses. To think about radio or to purchase radio, the BBC use it, and the commercial radio companies all use it too. It's absolutely crucial to have, you know, that gold standard. You know, that it sets the benchmark, really. I think, you know, maybe a country like the US would be able to get away with two different standards, but you know, nowhere else, really, no other market.
Piers, can you give us an indication of the a broadcaster, an FM broadcaster, that either simulcasts on DAB or introduces a new channel with a similar coverage, what the percentage decrease on their signal distribution costs? If you compare an FM service with a particular coverage versus DAB, is there a significant reduction?
Well, it depends. let's take a station of ours, Signal Radio. So it broadcasts on FM Signal 1 and on AM Signal 2. Obviously, you know, AM slightly more expensive than FM. It also owns the multiplex that sits over the top of that coverage, its coverage area. But the actual DAB network, because it's a legacy one that was built with old technology, is actually a lot more expensive, and there's more transmitter sites because just to make sure the SFN works properly. The benefit, though, so if there was no one else sitting on the DAB multiplex, you know, for Stoke, for Signal Radio, you know, it would be pretty horrid, for, you know, financially. But obviously, the BBC it carries its BBC Radio Stoke service on there, and there are other, you know, commercial third-party commercial services on that mark. So we can offset some of that, but it really depends. In the round, you can offset when we do. You know, we're grateful to be able to hold some MUX licenses as well and be a MUX operator, because that does help us in that dual transmission factor.
So there's not a clear figure then?
I can't put. I mean, I could put numbers on specifics, but, you know, it's...
You've got a figure?
Not an exact figure, but the graph I showed earlier from the EBU, they modelled several different size countries on the DAB, FM and IP stats. And I honestly can't remember the exact figures off the top of my head, but it's available to download from the World DAB site with all of the workings out to show sort of how they calculated it all, number of transmitter sites, area covered, services on each multiplex, etc. So they are available for people that want to find out.
Okay. I think we should do lunch.
Great.
Let's give Piers a round of applause. Thanks very much. restaurant, and we'll reassemble in an hour. Thank you.